And welcome to today's enlightening edition of Outside the Box Radio. I'm Alex Hansery. It is March 10th, 2015, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. And today is a very special edition of Outside the Box. We're going to be talking with Vinnie Eastwood about the alternative media, about some of the experiences he has had, about some of the things he has learned over the years, as well as myself. And we're also going to get into tips for truthers or people seeking truth in a world where it seems that sociopaths have dominated the world of the job market, management. We are encountering more and more people that are trying to push out the truth out of their lives. And in some cases, that means us. Sometimes we're the nail that's first to get hit. How do we manage our lives doing what we do while living amongst people that knowingly are supporting the evilarchy? So these are things that we're going to be examining in our next 2 hours. And we are now going to go to Vinnie Eastwood, who is connecting with us. Actually, he's a day ahead. It's, I believe, the 11th of March. Our guest, Vinnie Eastwood, calling in from New Zealand. Vinnie, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Alex. Great to be on the show. And you see the word evilarchy there. And for those who don't know, evilarchy is a mixture of the word evil, the monarchy, and malarkey.
And that's very true.
It does need to be said because ultimately there's too much seriousness. Or at least in my opinion, there's too much seriousness. One thing that happened to me yesterday, Alex, is I got an email again from somebody who's been emailing me since I started in 2010, who emails me from a non-existent email with a fake name. And it's not like, oh, Jersey Cow or some kind of fake name like that. It's just like H, like that's their name, you know, h@h.com. Fake name, fake emails, and guess what? Because they're fake emails, I can't reply. And what this person does is just email me all the time, basically telling me that I'm an egotistical, narcissistic person, and I'm making my show all about me. And so I'd like to, you know, say something, if he's listening. Yes, the Vinnie Eastwood show is about Vinnie Eastwood. It should have been pretty obvious from the start. So if I talk with my guests during my show, that's what's supposed to happen. It's not being egotistical, despite the fact that I am. I just thought I had to get that off my chest. It's been bugging me for years.
That is a great place to start, because when I was in Colorado, you know, I felt like there was a disconnect between a close friend of mine at the time. And he had made the statement that when you have a website like firstandlastname.com, that it's all about promoting your ego. And one of the things that you and I have both faced in our life, as well as some others in the audience that may have been in similar situations, when we put up a website that has our name on it, some people misinterpret what we're doing. When in reality, I mean, that's our name because that's who we are. That's who's putting out the content. That's the author of the post. That's the host of the radio show. It's an identification, just like an ID is a identification. But unfortunately, we're living in a world now where so many things are backwards. It's beyond what we've seen in They Live, but very similar. And we are seeing people that are not putting on the sunglasses and seeing things how they are. So they're misinterpreting what we're doing. And in some cases, and I experienced this firsthand in Portland, when some people recognize my face, being also on Access TV, it makes it much more personal and sometimes threatening to them. People feel threatened by the messenger of the truth. And that is not something that we talk about in every single radio show or video that we do. That because we are messengers of truth, we're constantly facing misdirected anger and allegation. I've heard at least 10 people in my life say Vinnie Eastwood is this, that, and the other. And then I'll say, well, yeah, but he has had quite a few people on his show. And one thing that I do want to say, an observation of, and I'm not, you know, trying to just blow smoke up your you-know-what or be super nice, but even when AFR went down, you kept interviewing your guests. And I knew you were going to do that because you were already doing that. You were already, and you're helping us archive this right now. You know, that's a really big deal to do the technical back-end, to record things, to edit things, to coordinate guests coming on your show. It's time-consuming. And so I respect that, and I aspire to be a disciplined person where I'm doing more of that in my daily life. But that's what people forget, that there's actually hard work that's being done. And in my own life, what I've found is sometimes when I need the help, it comes in at just the right moment. Have you had that kind of experience, Vinny, where it seems like, you know, you're on the edge financially and, you know, that you're so close to the edge? But
it's pretty much like a daily thing, but one instance like that does pop out at me. I think it was back in 2012, I think during the winter. And you know when you get up in the morning on bill day and you kind of like you go into your computer to check your bank accounts and what have you, and while you're on the way there, you're thinking about all these bills you've got to pay today. Okay, you've got to pay the rent, I've got to pay the power, and I have to pay the internet. All right, how much? Jesus, that's $500. And I go down and type in into my PayPal, and there's a $500 donation in there from one guy.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens.
And it's kind of like a constant thing. There was another time I got on my show and jumped on it in the morning. I didn't have time to have breakfast or coffee, anything. I was really, really trying to keep pull it together sort of thing. And after the show ended, I was like, you know, I'm really craving a meat pie. And all of a sudden there was this knock at the door. And it was my mate Dan, and he brought me a meat pie. Everything you need, everything you want, will come to you, but only at that exact second when you need it. You never have it ahead of time, all right? It's like, almost like you have to change your understanding of how the universe works. Previous understanding of the universe is that you have to plan, you have to slave yourself out, and you have to save up, and you have to make sure that everything's sorted before you even get to that situation. The change in that, from planning everything to having everything on the fly, and just knowing that despite the fact that you've got no plans, you've got no savings, you've got no backup, every single thing will happen exactly as it needs to, and you'll be sweet. Because the universe is taking care of you because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
You know, when I was in Colorado, I was going down a road and the brakes went out on my vehicle. And it was in that moment that I prayed, okay, angels, you led me all the way here up on this hill. Now I'm going down the hill. Somebody better do something now. Well, I did something and I turned the wheel to the right and swung the car around and slammed the car into the ditch. Therefore, stopping my propelling forward down the hill, which could have ended my life in the year 2013. So if I would have had to walk to town, you know, to get help with my tires, and I think I had like $21 cash on me at the time, no spares, or maybe one spare, maybe like a donut, like really pathetic, right? Really pathetic. Well, this guy was going up the hill. 30 seconds later, this Hispanic man in a large work vehicle, he just happened to have a warehouse a mile up the road where he had a tire repair shop. Boom. Just like that. Mm-hmm. And there are other things like that that have led me to believe that there's been something that has kept me alive. Now, most of the audience knows that are regular listeners that this show currently is being done out of a homemade micro. When I say micro, smaller than normal. Think like micro machines. A micro tiny home on wheels. And so it's just slightly longer than my height, plus room for a dresser. What I'm doing now is showing people that even if you aren't even living in a conventional home, because there's also a process of recovery once someone becomes homeless, or they may call it home free, they may be on the non-materialistic path where they're just not someone's slave. And with so many social paths in the workplace, many people have opted out from the slavery experience to hold on to our sanity. But there's a price and there's a sacrifice but I do believe that we can overcome. And it took me some time to put all this together, get the help to build this, earn the money for the materials, and then boom, get it on this $300 trailer. We actually started with building the trailer, welded the Harbor Freight trailer, then built it on there. And now I've got a backup computer coming. Pretty soon I'm going to have my mobile internet. I'm just trying to decide first on a company, which company I want to go with. Then when I've got that, I've got internet everywhere. And I'm probably going to spend more time out in the country, in nature, because Portland's really starting to get to me, and I'm not going to go off, but there's been a lot of geoengineering today. And it's not an issue I like to talk about because it makes me feel helpless. And I don't like feeling helpless, but I'm feeling sick from whatever's going on. So I'm trying to set an example that even though most of the people in the alternative media, maybe not all of them, but quite a few are selling something, and there's nothing wrong with selling something, it's whether people really need that product or whether or not the airtime is being used to send people towards a call to action for something that they don't actually need. And so people can actually promote the truth, be a messenger of truth, but operate outside of a wheel that involves deception, a wheel that involves convincing people that they need to listen to the same voice all the time, and just lots of things. So I'm trying to lead by example, and I'm learning trial by error. And that's pretty much why I'm doing what I'm doing now. The very fact that we can use Skype and YouTube and online radio to communicate powerful messages is priceless. And most people don't really know how valuable it is until it's actually gone.
Yeah, yeah. When I started, it was balls deep, you know. Like, I had no backup plan whatsoever. I was a really, really good salesperson. I think my top rate was about 50%. So I could be telemarketing, and half of the people that pick up the phone will sell what I'm buying, will buy what I'm selling. And that's kind of like a very similar skill to talk radio, because in sales, it's about trust, essentially. That was why I was a better salesperson than everyone else. Everyone else got into a conversation with a customer trying to make money from that customer. I got into the conversation with the customer trying to save money for that customer, right? That's the difference between a salesman and a predator. A salesperson will have great instincts when it comes to communicating with people and trying to help people by using the products that they currently have available to them. And when I didn't have a product that was useful or anything, I said to them, look, we can't help you. However, these guys over here who are our competition, they have even better rates than us and better rates than you've currently got. So that was how I sort of developed a lot of my, in retrospect, on-air personality, is being able to be so blatantly and obscenely honest that I can get complete strangers to trust me inside of a minute. And when I started, I'd gone through three jobs with sales companies that were run by sociopathic scum, basically. It was terrible, and I was starting to watch a lot of documentaries, about two per day on a six-month cycle. That will radically change your worldviews, and if you don't believe me, try doing it and then argue with me later about it. It's not possible for you to have the same worldview after you've done hundreds and hundreds of documentaries in a row. And my last job paid me a lot better than all the rest of them. So my last month's work, I got about $4,000 cash after tax and $11,900 worth of shopping vouchers for a local mall chain, right? So I was like, okay, I'm now out of the workforce. I'm now going to be a 100% full-time dedicated truth activist. So bought myself a camera and a little mid-range iMac computer. That was year one. I'm now in year eight. I still have that little old iMac computer. My camera has been more or less destroyed, but I've gotten new things. I've been donated, I think I'm on my fourth donated camera so far. I have three iMacs. I have a 72-inch plasma screen behind me that I use for broadcast sometimes. I've got a lot of donated clothes, dress shirts, ties, that sort of thing, so I can look sharp when I'm going out and doing public events. I had 2 100-watt megaphones donated, office chairs, the whole nine yards. I've got wireless microphones, two sets of wireless microphones, one with a lapel and one that's a little Bluetooth one that you can use as sort of like a handheld microphone. So it's like you don't need all of the stuff that I got now in order to start doing what you're supposed to be doing. I think it's about dedication, ultimately, because you can't sit there, as I was doing, every day, doing between 8 and 14 hours of editing for activists who cannot pay you for an audience that is quite small. The truth movement's very, very small. You can't do that and hope for rewards, right? And I initially had a co-host, and after 9 months, he quit because he thought that within 9 months of being a talk radio show activist truther, that he would get enough income to live off. Mm-hmm. It's just the naivete. It's unbelievable.
Well, that's actually funny because when I was in Dallas, Texas, I had gone down there to help a man that wanted to start his own alternative media network. Long story short, didn't work out because I was dealing with a sociopath. Well, I tried to get some other people involved in editing, helping me do this daily show because that's what I was brought down there to do, and that was produce a product. The pressure was on, but I was willing to do it, but it wasn't something I could do just by myself, especially when there were other things that he wanted me to focus on, like sales and MLM and things that I chose to not get involved with. That's why I left. But there were several individuals that I tapped to say, hey, you guys have experience with, you know, your alternative media website. Maybe you can pitch him, you know, on a price and we can get you as employees. And the price they gave was, it was pretty up there. It was in excess of $10,000 per month for a crew of three. And they already had their house paid for by another guy, a millionaire that had brought them to Texas. So, you know, it doesn't matter who they are. And of course, I don't think they're going to be listening to this broadcast. The point is, they wanted to have a lot of money to even start. But yet these were supposedly truthers. But really, it was a matter of who's going to pay me the most because someone else was already paying them to promote his church. Which was a little creepy. You know, they were coming up to people in the mall wanting to get free hugs and save people in the middle of the mall. And so, you know, without getting into all that, what I found in my travels is there's a couple things here at this point. Some things you got to learn to do yourself when it comes to things of a technical nature.
I'd say basically almost all things you have to learn to do yourself.
Part of my journey's been learning that, and I'm glad you learned those lessons early on, because sometimes when we rely on others, and it's great when we have help and we work together as a team, but we should never expect that. You know, now we have the technology to learn how to make our own graphics. I'm messing around with Keynote, so I can make my own, you know, custom graphics for, say, YouTube videos or whatnot. I have not yet gotten into Photoshop, but now it's easy for us to learn how to use iMovie, and this is advice for people listening that might be thinking about doing their own thing. You know, start to use the technologies that are already easily accessible to you, including software programs, if you already have a MacBook Pro or a computer. And, of course, I do recommend a MacBook Pro if anyone's going to be doing
I must advise against using Yosemite macOS 10.10 because they changed GarageBand and iMovie to the point where I've been using them for like years and years and years. I don't recognize how to use them. They messed it right the hell up. And a lot of people in Hollywood who have upgraded their machines and everything to the new operating system are also very, very pissed. So if you want, if you're trying to get your Mac together or whatever, try to get 10.6.8. I think it's called Snow Leopard. Don't do 10.10, that bloody Yosemite, man. It'll drive you freaking nuts.
And, you know, it's really easy these days to also pull down news clips and videos, much easier than it used to be. You know, people can just go to keepvid.com.
Love that one.
Yeah. Sometimes it works. When it doesn't work, I go to clipconverter.cc. Mm-hmm. And you know what I like about that? I can take a talk show on YouTube and I can make an MP3 out of it. And then what do I do? Well, then you put it on the iPod. And then what do? You go running in the park, experiencing the sunshine while listening to your favorite podcast. And that is the beauty of it all, where you're mixing the best of technology and you have all this great knowledge and information, and you can take it with you on the go. Meanwhile, most people with their iPods are listening to Lady Gaga, and they're listening to, you know, some sort of like demon drum. But you don't have to do that, the listener. There's choice here.
Yeah. I think when it comes down to the choice and the technology, it depends who you're listening to, why you're listening to them, you know. It's kind of like, you know, if you go into a candy shop or whatever, there's all this candy and it's all good. It's just some of it is more to your taste than others. Some of you like the Jawbreakers. Some of you like the gumdrops. Some of you like the M&Ms. But everybody likes candy. Right, and the truth is the candy, and it just depends what your taste buds are attuned to. If you are finding it very difficult to deal with the situation and the reality of it, and you're starting to freak out, you're starting to get angry, you're starting to get upset about it, that's a good thing. That shows that the truth is starting to sink in. But if you want some relief of that, you should probably listen to my show, because we're telling really lame jokes all the time, bro. All right? To help ease that tension. And as far as I know, there isn't really too many other options in the truth movement in terms of truth movement comedy. Right, just having a laugh. I mean, I know about Joy Camp. Hi, it's Rupert. Those guys are both pretty freaking hilarious. But in terms of the real serious stuff, there is so much that to choose from that it's beyond a joke.
That's true. I will also say about the sugar analogy, sometimes sugar is bad for us, and we have an addiction to sugar, just like people have an addiction to certain shows that are all based around adrenaline and releasing adrenaline. And I'm not going to go into criticizing any particular website or individual, but just state that I also do cover a lot of serious news, but I also like to keep things on the social commentary end of seriousness, where we're looking at what's going on within society itself. When I'm able to really loosen up and crack jokes and whatnot, I tend to do better on camera, in person, in public, on a street corner with other people where there's other energies around. When I'm by myself and it's just me, I tend to be more reflective and I go deeper into the thought itself, which has its own plus, but it's hard for me to force humor, although humor is very much in demand. And what today's society is missing, we're missing a Bill Hicks of today. And I have looked throughout YouTube for the comedian of today. And you know what? Carlin isn't alive today. I love hearing him over and over and over again. But, you know, we need to see another Bill Hicks. Not to compare anyone to Bill Hicks, but, you know, someone to really take a show on the road. And, of course, Bill Hicks, with like a lot of people that have shared very important ideas with society, you can even say prophetic. It seems to be after people die or after they pass away, that's when they become really well known by society. And I don't know whether that's the mind fuck within society to want to see someone dead first and then go check out his work or his music or his his spoken word. I don't know. But there's many cases of society only looking at you know, because it wasn't until after Bill Hicks passed that he really became a legend. But he was also a man before his time. Here he was talking about the Western governments arming the third world to the teeth, you know, pick up the gun, you know, and here we see the pick up the gun analogy in today's day and age with ISIS. So yeah, Vinny, I would love to see more comedy, especially someone take the stage, because the world definitely needs it. And I don't think that Jon Stewart is an example of that. He may be a tap dancing clown, and he may be somewhat funny, but he also makes light at a very serious things that perhaps someone should take more seriously. So humor could be used as a weapon, and it could be used to heal.
Imagine a healing weapon that you actually shoot it at somebody and they get healed. Oh, didn't see that one coming. Get sniped with a gag. I was just thinking, you know, when you're saying that, because the exact same thought, almost word for word, occurred to me yesterday. And it's like, oh my God, it has to be me. That was actually the thought that occurred to me, bro. I've been wanting to be a stand-up comedian ever since I got, like, totally addicted to Bill Hicks, and I, like, listened to all his things, and I can recite some of his shows almost verbatim. Like, that's how much I listened to the shows again. And it's like, I always wanted to be a stand-up comedian, really, ultimately, isn't it? And it reminds me of what George Carlin said when he was a boy in school. I think he was like 7 or 8 years old. And I said, well, what makes you happy? What do you want to do with your life? And he goes, well, I like talking to people. I like making people laugh. And I like talking about things that matter. And after a brief stint in talk radio, he got into stand-up comedy. And that was kind of it for him. And I'm of more or less the same personality type. And the other day I was interviewing Alfred Weber, and he said, like, I was doing webcam, and I've changed my studio around now, so instead of sitting down with the microphone in front of me, I'm now standing up with the mic on a stand. And Alfred says to me, Vinny, you're like a stand-up comedian. And I go, I know, all I had to do was lose the chair, bro.
I actually got to check out that interview. I haven't seen the interview with Alfred, but I saw it. I've definitely seen a lot of Alfred's. Where do you come up with some of your ideas for some of your guests? Because, you know, you definitely seem to keep growing in terms of reaching outward, you know, going beyond just the same old guests and bringing new ones. But I also got to say, you've also had some, the audience.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to admit a lot of things right now. And a lot of people will think less of me because I've admitted them, but some people will appreciate my honesty. I don't know who I'm interviewing from one day to the next. Half the time it's not scheduled. I get guest suggestions for people that I've never researched, never talked to, from listeners who have never emailed me before and simply send me somebody's name, somebody's email, or somebody's website or whatever. Now, this is how easy it is to get a guest, ladies and gentlemen. You send them a freaking email. You can't find their email? Search their name plus the word contact. And if they have a web page, it'll come up on Google with their web page and the contact bar, which you can send them emails through. One of my very generous listeners who gave me $6,000 New Zealand dollars just plops $600 bills on my desk. To get my new computer that's in the shop right now. Of course, new computers are like that. That's how I know Yosemite's a bad thing for you. He gave me a list of 20 guests, 20 plus. And hold on, I've got the list right here. I just want to read this out. Okay, so it is Paul Craig Roberts, Steve Pachinik, James Corbett, Nick Begich, Jesse Ventura, Doug Rocky, Lord Monckton, Bob Chapman's daughter, Syrian Girl, Mike Adams, Michael Tellinger, Christopher Busby, Pastor Lindsay Williams, Gerald Salente, David Long, Isabel Beenan, and Richard Gage. Now, how long do you think it took me to find the contact details for and message via Facebook and or email for all of those? It took about 2 hours. And this morning, I woke up to have Richard Gage, Gerald Salente, and Dr. Nick Begich emailing me back saying they'd love to come on a show. And Gerald Salente is coming on tomorrow. So it's that easy, really. If you put a tiny little bit of effort in, and this was just doing copy-paste, mind you. Hey, I'd like to interview you on my show. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's on American Freedom Radio. And it gets syndicated throughout the world and New Zealand. Short, sharp, simple. Just remember, you're dealing with people who get a lot of requests from a lot of people and a lot of emails that aren't even requesting anything, who just babble on for pages. You know what you do when you're in that kind of situation? You ignore those completely because you just don't have the time to deal with everybody's stuff. So be empathetic about that kind of situation and really know when you're messaging people who you know, or at least you should realize, are quite busy, try to waste as little as their time as possible, and the likelihood that they'll get back to you and give you some of their valuable time, which you want, is far more likely.
And we are in a day and age where they are getting more requests than ever with so many blog talk shows and so many online radio shows. And so, you know, it's a little different than 10 years ago where there was only so many people with an independent show. So a lot of them have chosen to, you know, in some cases they don't get back and it's nothing personal. They're either traveling and they're on the go. And there are certain situations, though, where there are PACs with other larger people in the alternative media where they feel a sense of loyalty to that particular host. And it's not too different with Coast to Coast AM. So sometimes that's something that we're up against. We have the potential guest wondering if it's worth their time. But another thing that comes up is whether or not we will respect them. There are some people that end up having great guests on. And then they will jump them like it's some sort of alley brawl, as we talk about sociopaths in the alternative media, which is something that someone can be. Not to demonize anyone, we could become infected by the negativity. You know, let's all be honest here. We're not perfect human beings. Sometimes we get angry. What's important is to correct our behavior when we become infected by the negativity of our environment, and right, shall I say, movement.
Yeah, right there and then, and just like catch yourself being a dick and just go, oh, sorry, I'm sorry, I'm so sorry. All right, it's like the people who can be a dick and then say sorry right away are the ones you know aren't sociopaths, because you know something? Psychopaths can't apologize. I mean, like, they literally cannot apologize for anything. And if they do apologize, it sounds something like this. Well, I'm sorry you feel that way. Anybody ever had that kind of stuff? Oh my God. Like, really, really. Detoxification. This very word is so important. And there's many things that you need to detox from. Detox from junk news. Throw your TV the F out of the freaking house! Why are people still watching the news? It's unbelievable to me. I haven't even watched it in like a year. and people are like coming at me, well, but there's this news story and that news story and that news story. Really? And is this done by mainstream media? Well, yes, yes it is. And is it full of propaganda and BS? Well, yes, yes it is. So you're sitting there listening to propaganda and BS and giving it your time, your energy, and your attention, when you could be putting it elsewhere.
And all those rules apply when someone's on the YouTube feed and they're watching, you know, because there's been an explosion in YouTube channels that push fake news or the most sensational news, because that's what draws the hits. That's what draws the views. And that's what makes the AdSense. Nothing wrong with AdSense, but certain people are using it in some pretty perverted ways. Let me just say that. I never would have thought 10 years ago that the conspiracy genre would include so much fake news. So just having an awareness that, hey, when you see another really sensational article that starts with a secret source within the Kremlin states, you might be reading a Sorshafal article. You know, just having that pattern recognition that goes, oh, okay, this is one of those disinfo articles that's probably written in one of those Pentagon InfoWars rooms somewhere, you know, where they're cranking out disinfo all the time. Just, you know, We should have greater discernment as we grow older, in my opinion.
Yeah, and age is no guarantee of maturity, is it?
I have found that to be the truth, yes. I find young people, for the most part, to be heavily under control psychologically, especially men and women, especially women. But I will say that I think a lot of it has to do with cultural and environmental factors, like the school system, what they see in the media, and their parental upbringing. I think that children in their, you know, in their pure state, I think we could see both examples of animalism, children attacking other children and basically sounding like beasts, which at times alarms me and wonder where the hell those souls came from. And in other cases, because not all children are the same, in other cases we can see children that seem very intelligent, bright, intuitive, and then put fluoride in them, beat them some McDonald's, give them some video games, beat them a few times, send them to school, and all that sparkle, all that life, all that intuition just down the toilet as they get their first swirly in high school. Because trauma can do that and cause the soul to leave the body, as some of your past guests have talked about, that talk about defense against archons, for example. Mm. So we're living in a traumatic world where these environmental factors, smart meters, and all these other things are creating ongoing trauma. Mm. So just throwing that out there, that we are in a traumatic environment, and we should find ways to rise above that in whatever ways we can.
I was just getting some grief from a follower of a former guest, and this former guest kind of like attacked me and was really angry with me, even though I did, in their own words, the best interview with them that anyone's ever done, right? And then proceeds to attack me because I'd already done that, I sort of topped it and don't really want to continue going on with it. To a degree. And then this listener of this person says to me something along the lines of, oh, he's got PTSD, it's okay, people are like that. And I say, well, bro, just because you've been traumatized doesn't give you a right to traumatize other people.
Well, I will say that there are certain people that come on really strong with their praise. I don't want anyone to think I'm talking about them, because I could be talking about something from many, many years ago.
People are so egocentric, they'll assume it's them anyway.
Right. And there's been very many supportive people out there that have been, saying that have been put out positive energy in a world where there seemingly is so much negative energy in comments. But what I will say, when some people become super overly supportive at once, it's a red flag that perhaps something could easily, because we're imperfect beings. So when all of a sudden there's that pressure, which actually reminds me of something else I want to bring up for our conversation. There is this psychosis within truth seekers that needs to be arrested, thrown in jail, and quarantined. And it's a way of looking at the world. It's seeking the talk show host that has the most, that has a solution, that can be the leader, that can save the world. I'm seeing this rhetoric in YouTube comment sections still to this day. Well, I don't know if I can trust him 100%. This thinking comes from hierarchy. This thinking comes from a person in a position that wants someone to lead them. You can't believe, you shouldn't be listening to anyone 100%.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
I've actually said that a lot of times, like, don't believe everything that I say. In fact, it's quite ironic, bro, because I think about maybe over 5 years ago, somebody who invited me on their radio show here in New Zealand, who just has a local radio show, and they do one day a week, and they basically just play music or whatever. Like, nobody's ever heard of them. They're not very successful. They're like, I don't know, maybe 1% of my audience alone. And then I saw them commenting on Facebook that, oh, you should take everything Vinny says with a big grain of salt. And I got really angry with them. And it's only in the last year or so that I've realized, oh my God, he's absolutely true. Not only does everybody else have to take me with a grain of salt, but I have to take myself with a grain of salt too. I have to stop taking myself so seriously. And I have to stop taking what other people say about me personally. Because it's that sort of emotional baggage that you're choosing to carry around. It's like that scene from American History X where they say hate is baggage, and it truly is. If you hate anybody who criticizes you, and you're in the public sphere, operating, talking on radio shows, making YouTube videos, you're going to be really, really struggling to get any work done, because you will be busy on Facebook and on YouTube comment sections defending yourself against dicks who insult you and don't know you and don't care about you and are only there specifically to waste your time, because unlike you, they have nothing better to do.
Some people call these people trolls. I don't think that the term troll really does the this type of personality type justice. It's far more involved than just simply troll. And people can become troll-like perhaps by reasons that we don't fully understand, but what I've become aware of in the last couple of years on a deeper level is there are patterns to when the attacks come. And sometimes it comes when I'm trying to, for whatever reason, as if the eye of Sauron is watching my every action. It's when I'm getting ready to move something forward in my life, something big. There were a couple comments that came when I started doing the radio show when I said, hey, I'm going to go back to AFR and, like, you know, a 2-minute YouTube video. And I'm also posting some other interviews. And a comment will come in like, oh, let's just see. Because a lot of these comments are based on people that have watched me over the years and they've watched my weaknesses. So they're like, okay, where is his weaknesses? How can I say something that can get inside his, okay, we're going to go, bam. Hey, there you go again. Trying to bring up some of your stuff from the past to still be relevant or something like that. Mm. And because I'm home free and there's been issues with, or I'm in this trailer or whatever the hell this is, this experience, where it's going, I don't know, but at least I'm back on the air and I'm back in Portland and I'm doing Access TV again. So I'm a lot more, it's more grounding than just being in the middle of nowhere. But there are people that don't respect that. They will almost demand that I work for them or something, which I've never, you know, I've been trying to understand, like, what is in the psychosis within man or men or boys, really, that may have penises, but they're not really men.
I've been demanded to work for people as well. And I don't know, if I wanted a job and if I wanted to work under somebody, I wouldn't have quit my job 8 years ago and lived on the bone of my ass for like 5 years until 2012 when I garnered enough listener support just to be able to pay my freaking rent. So when people offer me a job or offer me a gig or something, I'm instantly like, I can kind of do without it, bro. And yeah, you know, and here's an article by psychologytoday.com. Internet trolls are narcissists, psychopaths, and sadists. Trolls will lie, exaggerate, and offend to get a response. Now, I saw a bar graph a while ago on this very topic that actually has an assessment about why people use the internet and what their and what enjoyment they get out of their internet activities, and also has a psychological profile behind the people there doing it. So those who want to troll, who are doing all that offending and don't even really have a point for their comments, just they're just there to piss people off, they get put into that massive indicators for sadism, narcissism, and psychopathy. And, you know, these people aren't the kind of people you want to be associating with, bro. So I have a little SpongeBob SquarePants picture, and he's got like a little, he's got his hands open, sort of like Jesus, but there's a rainbow going from one side to the other, and it says, block, and the scum is gone. Every time somebody insults me, abuses me, calls me a name, lies blatantly, and is basically acting like some kind of narcissistic sociopathic scumbag, block, and the scum is gone. And you have to do this regularly. It's not like laying concrete where it just kind of sits there and it's fine. It's more like planting a garden, and you need to weed your garden of trolls on a constant basis.
It is gone unless someone wants to play into it and let it rent any space in their mind. And so say if someone is slandering someone on YouTube, and I went through, I sent you a message. I said, bro, I'm under attack too. It was at a moment where you were posting that other people were being under attack in the geoengineering movement and other things. What was happening with me is I stepped away from the guy that helped me build this tiny home. And because I started to see his sociopathic nature, he was like this weird, sick version of Sergeant Slaughter. And so I've had more than a few encounters with wacko survivalist types that somehow or another were drawn to me by watching my YouTube channel and reached their arm out in friendship, which is awesome in the flesh when it actually happens. What's scary is when it's heterosexual male-on-male fatal attraction and some older dude wants me to be his boy. That's prison shit creepy. And I don't mean a homosexual way, but it might as well be. For me to be his employee, to keep hanging out with him, to let him put me down and stand over me. Whoa! To get mad and punch the wall. Just because I'm 5'6", weighing in 167 pounds, bro, do not establish physical dominance over me. So, I left his house. He left his doors open, something happened, someone stole this dude's tools. And what happened was he went on a YouTube slander saying, Junkie Alex Ansari, saying I use drugs. Just, you know, and I do smoke marijuana. But people that don't smoke marijuana, they will use that as a...
there's this expectation thing.
If they want to slander, they will compare that to smack if they don't smoke and go, you are a drug addict. And so, basically, he slandered through that. And then I reacted to it, reacted with some videos which just fed into it. And then he started stalking places that I frequent, looking for me, in order to provoke a sense of fear and terror. So that's an example of where I could have shut it down earlier, but fed into it, and then it just got worse. And then I shut it off.
There's a difference between somebody helping you and you relying on somebody to help you. And it works like this. If you go to a party and somebody's smoking a joint and they pass you the joint, you say thanks and you puff on the joint and you pass it back. Okay, that's somebody helping you. However, if you go to that party and you see somebody who hasn't lit a joint yet and you say, hey, bro, you gave me a smoke of that joint last time. Can you give me that? That is expecting somebody to help you. And that's kind of rude, isn't it? Especially if you're not paying them, especially if you got nothing on it. And likewise, the scenario for me in terms of value and human life, if somebody says that they're going to pay me to do something now, I almost don't want to do it. If somebody asks me to help them for free, I'm very likely to do so. Isn't that interesting? And if somebody offers me money, but I have to do something first to get it, I will kind of turn it down. If somebody just gives me money because I've already done a whole lot of work, done on these radio shows or whatever, I just take it and say thank you. Because it's what Jack Blood told me. He used to be on AFR back in the day when I started. And I asked him, you know, you've been in this radio game for like 15 years, bro, nearly 20 now. And what happens with people in this industry, because you are more or less open like a wind trap to abuse, trolling, and that kind of thing from damaged people, or crazy people, or just bad people, it changes your personality. And I asked Jack, how did you manage to go through all this for this long and not turn into some form of douchebag? And he said, well, it's simple, really. Two rules. Number one, drink. Because if I didn't drink, I would have gone nuts a long time ago. And number two, take the money. If somebody's giving you something and they're not asking you to change who you are, then just take the money. You need that. You need that to pay your rent. You need that to pay for your food. You need to get into the mode of accepting people's generosity, because ultimately, vast majority of people in the truth movement are not being paid. And it's at the point where people start to offer to give you something because of what you've already done, just to thank you in their own way. That's when they're trying to help you out. Just take the joint and take a couple of puffs and pass it back, bro. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I hear you. You know, when a lot of that stuff stays away, to add to what I said, it's when things are going great. And I'm not in need, which sucks, of course, when I am in bad situations or, if I don't know what city I'm going to be in next. Those are not good situations, but it's taught me a little bit more about life. But when I'm at the top of my game and I'm producing interviews and, you know, I'm in the swing of things, a lot of that stuff doesn't seem to be as prevalent. So there is a method to the madness. And these people seem to come out of the woodwork when they think that we are at our most vulnerable. So I think one thing that we're learning about is not to give some of these people the ammunition that they can use against us. Even as some of us are really trusting and have a sense of innocence to us, even though we've seen so much insanity in our lives, I certainly have a certain sense of innocence to me, like a child at times when I, the thing for me, Vinny, is to be cautious with people, but not throw up such a big, big wall. When I was really, really young, you know, I started to see the programs of the world, like, you know, be tough, don't trust anybody. And, you know, some of that stuff started to come in, and some of it I started to have these disagreements with. Well, that doesn't make very much sense. What do you mean you can't trust anybody? I was like questioning this.
Yeah. I'm going to turn into a completely distrusted guy with no friends. This is a brilliant idea.
And we should question those thoughts that we have, especially if those angry, divisive thoughts are products of our environment.
Yeah. I think it's like we kind of... what was it? I saw this movie called Faithless once, and there was a great line from him. He says, this assassin's on the phone to his psychiatrist, and his psychiatrist is telling him, look, man, The mind is like a toilet bowl, okay? If you don't flush that shit out all the time, you're gonna get a blockage. And then you're gonna need to get a plumber, somebody like me, to unblock that shit, okay? Just flush it out regularly. And it's absolutely true, isn't it? It's like dead wood on a tree. The tree's just kind of getting weighed down with branches that are sapping energy that actually have no practical use to the entire structure, right? So there's a lot of things you will lose in this movement. You will lose friends. You'll quite likely lose family. You most certainly lose your passion for your job. And there's a whole lot of upsides that don't have the same value system. Like, if you're coming from a value system where it's about money being kept to a clock and having off time, these are the things that you kind of get into a routine of. Stepping out of that, changing your entire life systems, is not an easy transition, okay? It's like moving to a different country where they speak another language that you don't know a word of, and it takes you a long, frustrating process to train your brain to interpret messages differently. Instead of saying hello, people say konnichiwa, for example, in Japan. And the same is true for the truth movement. There is a language that we used to use when we were slaves, or rather when we were unwitting slaves. I still think we're slaves now, but we're just not unwitting about it. versus the language and the process and the values that you have when you're in the truth movement. And it's like everybody wants to nail things down, wants things to be cut and dry, carte blanche, black and white. It's not that way. The world has never been that way. It has not been easy to figure out. It has not been easy to survive. It has not been easy to learn things that are uncomfortable. And we had best get with that recognition. We had best realize that this is not going to be a walk in the park. This is a gauntlet. And we have to go through it, regardless of whether or not we want to.
And one other thing that came to me when you're talking about slaves, I've been in jail briefly a long time ago, like 1999, 2000. And I was one of those few that could be seen reading books that were found in the library that dealt with anything to do with whatever we are as humans, something outside the box of religion. Just I wanted to fill my mind with as much knowledge as I possibly could. And there were a few others that did the exact same thing, and we would trade notes, or we would just have a sense of camaraderie. While everyone else, all the other prisoners with their numbers, were playing things like Pinochle, or, you know, another favorite thing in jail is people squeeze together, squeeze together the candy bars and the chocolate chip cookies. They call it a dope fiend sandwich. That's what it was. And so while certain people have certain jailhouse activities, there's also this thing where you crush up all the pepperoni and all the Fritos. Oh, yum, yum, yum. And just watching this conditioned behavior and then seeing other forms of institutionalization later on in my adulthood, early adulthood, really gave me an early education. But not all slaves in the prison, not all prisoners, and there's many slaves in a prison, especially when they have people going out and cleaning up the road and doing daily labor, which is something I had to do in those brief months of the year 2000. And of course, one becomes demasculized when they have to take off their clothing and show parts of their body to gain reentry to the lovely county facilities. And if people wonder what I did, I had possession of something that could eventually kill you if you keep doing it. And again, this was the pre-alternative media years when I was in the dark ages, right before 9/11, and then I had this wake-up call. Leading me to my next point, you know, the greatest misconception that people have about what we're doing is that we're trying to spread fear, or that we're listening to other talk show hosts, or other talk show hosts got us to think the way we thought, or got us to think for ourselves about 9/11, for example, which is purely not the case. There may have been some people that made films But in reality, for me, this is a very profoundly spiritual thing that we're doing. When people take physical risk, did I mention ISIS is using the Ansar surname? Anybody catch that? Now you have. That is freaky. They have no connection to my family. But my family line goes back thousands of years. And it's recognized in Islam. So Western governments thought they would take the Ansar name and put it on ISIS? That's freaky. I'm the only Ansar in the alternative media as far as I know. That's fucked. So you got to have some serious, like, to get involved in this. And I know that you're one of the few, as you've said, you know, that's in New Zealand that's trying to raise awareness as to what's going on with the prime minister. It's a strange position to be in when you feel like you're the only one within a certain mile proximity. So, you know, we're living these really interesting lives where we're taking risks. We're doing what we're doing on the internet, which means we're being surveilled likely through our webcams or whatever else, but we don't care. We enjoy the fact that they're listening. We enjoy we hope they'll learn something from the things that we're sharing, because we are not promoting violence. People can go ahead and stockpile weapons all they want. We're not promoting a civil war. We're not promoting world war. We're promoting humanity. And if that's wrong, and if that's going to get us hurt, then friggin' drop the drone already. If the creator's going to give you the go-ahead, fine. But I do think there are some creative, powerful forces out there. You mentioned Jack Blood. Jack Blood has a quote, "Be bold, and mighty forces will come to your aid." And Vinny, with that, let's take a brief break. And when we come back, we're going to get deeper into how we stay sane and somewhat conscious in this very rapidly competitive, changing, sociopathic matrix that we're all residing in. I'm Alex Ansari. This is Outside the Box Radio. We'll be back in a few.
Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Nobody questions things. Every one of those items is provably untrue at one level or another, but we believe them because they're pounded into our heads from the time we're children. That's what they do with that kind of stuff. They put it in the heads of kids. They pound it in there because kids are too young to be able to mount a sophisticated argument against these kind of ideas. And so kids, and up to a certain age, by the way, kids are going to believe everything a grown-up tells them, everything. So kids never learn to question things. Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Why? People are too fat and happy. People are way too prosperous for their own good. Everyone's got a cell phone that'll make pancakes and rub their balls now, you know? So nobody wants to rock the boat. And people just gizmo. Americans have been silenced, bought off and silenced by gizmos and toys. And as a result, no one's ever learned to question things. No one questions things in this country anymore. No one questions things.
Padilla will remain a dictatorship.
Or be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship.
You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth.
You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyte removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyte is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyte LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
And we are back with our very special guest from New Zealand. It's Vinnie Eastwood from the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. My YouTube channel is youtube.com/AlexHansery, and AlexHansery.tv is being remodeled at this time. Hope to have that finished in a couple of weeks, so I'll let you know. But in the meantime, make sure you subscribe to youtube.com/AlexHansery. Just to lighten things up just for a little bit, Vinnie, you've allowed a lot of people on your show to pretty much air their dirty laundry, and I've listened pretty much for entertainment purposes, as I'm sure many other people have as well. Whatever you're feeling comfortable sharing, what are some of the craziest drama stories that have been brought to you and pretty much dropped on your doorstep that you can recall that just made you go, what the hell did I sign up for today?
I think that's kind of like all the time, just, you know, like on a daily basis sort of thing. Let me think about this for a moment. In terms
it's
of,
it's like another version of Dr. Phil. Just listening to it, and you're providing advice, and you're listening. You're not necessarily taking sides in some of these interviews, and some of the things that some of these people are saying is just so ridiculous. It's so beyond. Like, I could see criticism of some of these individuals. I could see some of these individuals being sociopaths that they're criticizing, but the actual claims without weight. And then, you know, saying that people that are dead and no longer alive are all these, you know, are connected with the FBI. And in fact, they're the conspiracy. And it's and you're just sitting there like, Dr. Phil, just let it out. Just let it out.
Well, and then finish it off with, and how's that working out for you? And it's actually like that all the time. You know, I don't want to name names or anything, but this is the I'll describe to you some of the general symptoms. Okay, so extraordinary claims with no evidence that they keep elaborating on and still keep refusing to provide evidence. And then anybody who questions them, they attack, demonize, and spread crap about all over the internet, also with no evidence. That's one personality type that I'm finding very difficult to deal with, and it, I don't know. I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist or anything starting with the word psycho, so I don't know exactly what that personality type is. I just kind of blanketedly put it under the unhinged category. Now, for anybody who thinks that all conspiracy theorists are crazy, you're stupid. Anybody who thinks that there is no conspiracy theorists who are crazy is frickin' stupid. Right? Like, really. Some of us do not survive going through the process, okay? It's the grief stage, trauma. Okay, so for me, for example, I can't deal with stress properly anymore as I used to be able to, not since I got arrested about 10 years ago. And I had my very first panic attack. I didn't know what was happening at the time. My legs suddenly gave out on me. I couldn't breathe. And I was in a police station. Okay, I was really, really badly traumatized by that. And anytime I think about it, it starts to happen all over again. Okay, so I've not gotten over that. Now, there's a grief process, I think. And the final two processes of grief after you lose a loved one, or in this case lose your faith in society, and as a patriot it's very difficult to realize that your country is under attack or under control of ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery, so you feel really depressed, And then, finally, acceptance. Now, anger's in there too. Some people, in fact, most people, don't get granted their acceptance. And it's really unfortunate. And one of the things that I really wish to help people with is actually to get to that stage. Get to that stage where they can have some acceptance over the bad things that have happened to them in their life. Understand that it's not entirely your fault that some psycho traumatized you. But again, as I said in the previous segment, just being traumatized alone is not justification to go around traumatizing others. Okay? If you're hurt, if you're in pain, you don't go around attacking the people who hurt you or caused you pain. What you're going to do then is you're simply going to complete a feedback loop and go around again and again and again until you realize that you're in a loop and you need to break out of the cycle. And as I say, most people don't reach that conclusion. I'm trying to get over a trauma that I've suffered, but that doesn't mean that I go around insulting, abusing, and lying in order to help me feel better. It just doesn't work. In order to deal with those kind of people, it's sort of like whether they're actually sane and they're just going through a lot of pain, or whether they're completely insane is of no never mind to me. I don't dig being traumatized by people. I can't handle it very well. And so hence the block and the scum is gone methodology. If somebody's hurting your feelings, being mean to you, accusing you of stuff that isn't true, or spreading rumors about you, you'll be surprised how blissful it is to suddenly never hear from them again by blocking their ass. And then when a few of their supporters show up to you, or they show up to you with fake accounts or anything, and you block them too, suddenly they kind of lose interest. It's much like a cat. If the mouse stops moving and plays dead, the cat will lose interest and stop trying to play with it.
And there's energy where we put our focus, but that's not just like where we're thinking. It's actually where our eyes are. So being that, you know, one of the things that I struggle with that I've mentioned is being recognized by people in the flesh. I can't block those. I can't block people staring at a supermarket. But you know what I can do? I can be aware of it with my peripheral vision and completely ignore them like they're not even there, even if they're trying to get my attention, because people in Portland will hold their stare on me. They don't turn it. They hold their stare. And so it's invasive and feels like psychic attack. And so I look down the street, or, you know, there's a lot of stories in the media that cause women to sometimes be afraid. And now at America's whitest city and me being a little bit brown, sometimes realities of the streets, and people are cautious. I project my attention forward now. I'm looking literally, I have the stare 1,000 miles, but peacefully. I'm looking way down there. I don't care about them, and I don't want to care about them. And it's like I'm 35 years old, but I'm really focusing on this like sincerely for the first time. It doesn't matter if they're afraid of me or if they saw my face on Access TV talking about, you know, who Obama really is, and they hate me for it. I'm looking forward. Because right now I can tell you, and I think that it sounds like it's the same with you, maybe 100% with you and me, definitely 99% to 100 of the support that I'm getting is outside the state of Oregon. It's worldwide. It's Australia. It's Europe. It's upstate New York City. It's South Texas. It's Canada. Every now and then a message from Hawaii. It's like, whoa, this is like, and not only that, by connecting with some of these people, I have learned about psychic phenomenon. I have met people that have said I was their teacher in a past life. And the only reason they're obligated to or helping me is because they feel, and I said, don't feel obligated. It's like, no, we know each other. I have to help you on this mission. And it's nothing really creepy or anything like that. But when someone shows their ability to remote view something or see something, or something to that effect, pick up on something, or know something, know that you need a camera because the camera just broke, or something like this one person, it validates that idea of non-local awareness in a lot of different ways. And to talk about psychic attack real briefly, Eve Lorgan was your guest before. She talked about alien interference in human relationships. Most women that I have dated have had their dreams invaded by something. And this has been happening most of my life. And I believe they've even attacked family. And so there are some of us that, for whatever reason, are on another radar that's outside of the box of what you can call government surveillance. And in my life, I do believe that I have had those type of supernatural experiences, whether it's my bloodline or something I've mentioned on the air or something. Someone somewhere is pissed off. And women that I've dated have had their dreams invaded and things implanted. Now, since I've come across Eve Lorgan's work and heard about Laura Eisenhower and the people that Alfred Weber has interviewed and people that you have interviewed like Cameron Day, who talks about the exact same thing, where you walk into a room and you're sending out a signal and all the drunks and bastards in the room turn around and go, why did you walk in here? What are you doing here? You don't belong here. That's what it's like for me in Portland. And partially why I'm homeless.
Maybe.
And so, and there's all the support, though, Vinny, coming from thousands of miles away. Mm. So some of us are living some abnormal lives as we're doing these shows. I just got to say that.
Yeah, I mean, I found that was the case until I realized something. People are visual. Very, very, very visual. They won't talk to you. They won't hear you speaking. They can't taste you. They can't read your thoughts. So the only thing that you have to influence other people without interaction is the visual. So that's why when I go to protests, I am dressed in a power suit with a Masonic tie and cuffs around my wrists and a collar around my neck. I call it urban camouflage.
You know, I used to wear a jacket on the show. I'm going to have to bring it back in style. But people do tend to respond to some of that. But the fact of the matter is we can use it for good. Not all symbols or sigils are inherently evil. And the suit and tie is one of them. Some people may say it represents being a slave or a noose. But if people are programmed, they're channel surfers or people that are programmed in society when they see someone on the street, if someone is saying something of importance, are they going to listen to the guy with the T-shirt? Or are they going to listen to someone who actually decided to press his shirt? So it's some of those factors as to why sometimes it makes sense to put on a jacket. And some people in the alternative media have said some kind of slanderous things based on appearance. When in reality, I think some people should think beyond that, whether someone wears a jacket or not. After all, you can get a jacket for $8 now at a thrift store, maybe even less.
Yeah.
Take it down to the dry cleaners and get it hemmed for another $10. Get it right down to your size.
Dude,
not a
big
deal, folks. It has nothing to do with how much money you have.
I went down to Save Mart. It's like a big warehouse where they have secondhand clothing, and I picked up a cashmere jacket for $15 New Zealand dollars.
That's great. I've always wanted one of those.
And all the rest of my clothes have been donated. Like my mate Jono, for example, he's a salesperson. He sells people insulation and things like that. And he's got like a fair amount of expendable income. So he upgrades his wardrobe every now and again. And whenever he upgrades his wardrobe, he and I are the exact same size. So he just gives me his old shirts. And these are less than a year old in most cases. And they look pretty swish. So it's like, I haven't been able to go out and buy any new clothes for a long, long time. I just haven't had spare cash, but clothing comes to me nonetheless. Even when I first started doing this in the first year or two, my auntie Vappy Kupinger, she's not really my auntie, but that's what I call her. She's a legend in New Zealand, a Māori talk radio show host, who is an expert witness in court and things in terms of treaty settlements and documents and the Māori language and everything. And her show was on Radio Wātea, which was urban Māori radio. Fairly small band, you'd think. However, only one night a week would she broadcast on Thursday nights, right? Starting at 9 o'clock at night and going through till midnight, 3-hour show. And she had more listeners during one of her broadcasts than the most powerful, most famous talk radio show hosts and networks in New Zealand. Like, she was actually rated number one. And she took me under her wing. Every now and again, she'd take me out for coffee and buy me lunch. And she would give me her son's old hand-me-down clothes and things like that and these big garbage sacks. And I'm still wearing these clothes today. And it's like, any way that you can contribute to somebody in the truth movement is a way that you should contribute. If you come up to somebody and you ask, how can I help, A lot of times that doesn't help at all, because you're asking somebody to do some work to find a job for you instead of actually just going ahead and helping. It should be obvious. And if it's not obvious, then you've got to be creative about it. How does this person need help? What do they want? Have a look, analyze the situation, and then offer something and give it to them without any thought of return. I mean, think about this. Are you listening to this radio show right now? Did you pay for it? No, you did not. Did you have to make any effort in order to record it, publish it, edit it, or program any of the live broadcasting systems? No, you did not. You were being given something for free that we instinctually are doing because we don't really feel like there's much of a choice. It must be done. And thus, if you want to contribute to people like us, doesn't necessarily have to be me or Alex, anybody in the truth movement, you have to contribute in the same way, okay? In your own unique, individual way to fulfill something that isn't there, that only you can fill.
Well said, and that's pretty much why I have faith in the future for myself. You know, as long as I keep doing certain things, the help will arrive when it needs to, and help is not always financial. The universe has very synchronistic ways of leading us to certain experiences to give us the piece of the puzzle that we're ready for when we're ready for it. So when it was time for me to have the experience in Colorado and leave Texas and leave Oregon, it was time for that and to have that experience, and did a few shows on it while I was living that experience. And then it was time to go somewhere else. And there was a time to go to Kansas City and check out what a dump that place was. And to say, boy, I may not be having a great time in Portland right now, but I'm sure glad.
I'm not in Kansas anymore.
Man, that place was, I don't know what kind of bomb they dropped there. But everything east of Tross Street, that's what I was told. Tross Street is like their MLK. And the further east you get from Tross Street, the worse it gets.
What does MLK mean? I mean, does it mean the men are not okay over there? Or what?
You know, apparently that's what it means. Every MLK in America seems to be... I'm actually a block off MLK at the moment right now. But that is one little strange thing about America the brave, America the free. Everywhere where there's an MLK, you better watch out. There might be gunshots nearby.
What does it stand for?
Well, in theory, Martin Luther King. You know, Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Okay, yeah. I'm from New Zealand. I didn't get the reference
I guess the question is, well, what does that even stand for? Well, he had a dream, and I'll tell you what, his dream's the American nightmare, because...
I had a dream that one day, in every city in America, there will be ghettos as far as the eye can see. I have a dream!
As they are, oh yes, and I'm also coming to you from the most gentrified city in Portland, so I said I would never come back here. My mindset changed upon my changes in location. So perspective and environment can really do a lot to change how we view something. So I came back, and now they're building all over. It's like China. They got these big old skyscrapers. You've seen those pictures, like they're building in China. They have these giant ghost cities. Well, we don't have ghost cities, but they're building massive stuff. So, you know, as we look at reality, as we go from the old ways or humankind as we know it and go to, as they say, the new man, and as we approach the year 2045, as some people are predicting that we're going to, you know, hit that point of singularity and the Terminator reality will become real. Yeah, I'm having my pinch myself moments right now looking at Portland's growth and more drones and people flying drones. And I'm waiting for the announcement that for women's safety, and I'm sure this is going to be popular, Vinny, all a woman's going to have to do is hit a panic button on her body, and it's going to send a message to the drone who's going to come film a sexual assault and maybe tase the rapist in the ass while it's happening. And I could just see the CNN pieces for this, but
I know where to locate my wife's magic button there. But the problem here is, like, basically you don't want anybody to be able to defend themselves in a tyrannical system. All right, ultimately that's it. We're here to protect you. Having someone else to protect you means inherently that you are unable. incapable of protecting yourself. What kind of a society values not having any ability to protect themselves from harm? Anybody got this instinct that's called fucking self-preservation? I mean, have I missed a health class in high school or something where it says, hey bro, when you get beaten up, raped, or somebody's trying to murder you, just whip out your iPhone and, you know, watch it and you can, maybe you can watch it later if you survive. No! It's this. Straightforward survival situation. Kill or be killed. Run or stay and fight. Those are your choices, ultimately. And if you're taking away people's choices, and this is something your statement reminded me of, there was an article that came out that some guy American university, I forget which one, said that, oh, we've got a gun ban on university, so if somebody tries to rape you, ladies, pee on them or vomit on them. You know? That's your defense. That's freaking disgusting.
Oh boy. It sounds disgusting. Yeah, I wonder if the UFC in 10 years, by the way, if they're going to be have men versus women fighting with weapons.
I saw an article the other day that said women are stronger than men. It's like, come on.
So they want to have a manufactured gender war, and we have this MGTOW movement arising, and some of us are trying to interject some ideas in the MGTOW movement to say, hey guys, there seems to be some spiritual warfare at play. At least I think so.
Dude.
And yeah, let's not fall prey to this. But you know what? Maybe it's better for some of us to go our own way, lest we get maced in the eyes accidentally. It's a time. Portland also has a syphilis epidemic or outbreak. What a better time to keep it in the pants.
Yeah.
So we're in some turbulent times, and I'll tell you what, it's not so much the gender, it's the sociopathic nature. And sociopaths are not empathetics, or not impasse. They don't have empathy.
They're certainly pathetic, though.
They're certainly pathetic. It's certainly pathetic to not have empathy for, well, what I'll look at is if that woman or that man. But a lot of us that are men, we may talk about women because it's not hating women, it's the opposite sex. It's more relevant to us. Whereas women, if women were doing a talk show, and some of them do, they're talking about men and they're talking about patriarchy. So whether we're men or women, it oftentimes comes through the form, the sociopath of the opposite sex because we seek love, because we seek romance. So for those of us that are single, that are in the day, we constantly are coming across sociopaths of the opposite sex. And again, I'm really asking the question, where is this sociopathic energy really coming from? And that's a much larger subject. But the one reason I bring that up is so people really start questioning, does it really make sense for us to hate each other? If love is the thing that can actually change this, and how can it just be about a gender when it takes a man and a woman to create both a female and a male? It takes both of us.
Yeah.
So something's going on within the collective of human consciousness that I think that we can guard against. But we're not going to be able to guard against it if we partake in sociopathic activities as a response, as you say, responding to the trauma by traumatizing others. That's all that is the illusion of getting energy or excitement by hurting someone else. And they're not getting really enjoyment from it. They may get high for like a few seconds, but it really just leads back down into more depression, more darkness, and then they just want to hurt even more. And then when they get tired of hurting someone, then they go to someone else. But, you know, some people might think this is a little new agey, but I've learned from my own life, everything that I do comes back to me. When I was really young, I shoplifted a wallet from Meyer and Frank. I was 14 years old. Immediately, I was arrested, and I wasn't taken to jail. I was released, but I was caught. Oh, I tried to do it again. Was I acting out because of things going on in my childhood? The answer is yes. But in that time period of 14 to 15, I felt that the universe was intervening. Later on, when I got into heroin, which I survived in 99, I was arrested, if you will, in a literal sense, and I feel that was an intervention. So
your general advice is get arrested and it'll and you'll learn some lessons about karma right there. And I guess the same lesson is true for me. If I didn't get arrested in university after selling weed for about 6 to 8 months, I may have continued being a douchebag who didn't really so much care about the truth. It's only once you've been traumatized, particularly traumatized by the system, that's when something within you will probably break and never mend, and you will spend the rest of your life trying to plug that hole of something that you lost, and you find a purpose for it. It's kind of like my belief in fate is that it's not a prospective thing. It's a retrospective thing. You can't go on to American Idol and say, oh, it's my fate to win American Idol, because then you freaking lose. It's once you win American Idol that you go, I guess it must have been my fate to meet that person and to do this audition and to do that song and so on and so forth. It's kind of like becoming congruent with the flow of the universe. Sometimes somebody chucks a big fucking rock in your rock puddle, and you've got to deal with that and drag it around with you. And to maintain sanity amidst that situation is very hard. I mean, I'm 6'4", well over 100 kilos. So when I get angry or upset, it's quite frightening for people to be around because I'm so large, because I'm so loud. And I think maybe because when I was a boy, I got hit a lot by my dad. I generally have a great aura of violence. I haven't touched or laid a finger on anybody since I was 15 because I just decided that it was the last time. I attacked my friend and I ripped a chunk of his hair right off of his head. And then I was like, I had a realization right at that moment. I never get away with anything violent ever. You know why? Cause I'm the 6'4" guy. You know? So I took that clump of hair and I went to the assistant principal's office and I put it on his desk and I said, I need you to suspend me because I just attacked somebody. And this is his hair that I ripped off of his head. And they suspended me. And I came back to school 2 days later. And I haven't been in a violent altercation since.
Yeah, I had some really interesting experiences in school as well. But like you, I can be a little intimidating, not for my height, but my eyes, my intensity, and the potential that I appear to have to some people that are insecure. Although I don't attack people, but I clearly have... I think from the perception of others, a build that could probably take them out if they were to assault me. But why do people have to judge other people like that? Like whether I can take that person or not take that person, because the kind of world that we're in, and I will also say the city of Portland, but we'll just say the world that we're in, although some people are in far more peaceful places than this. And some people might be listening in the ghettos of LA and Dallas. And I'm just grateful that I'm not in their situation. I will also say that even though I've been training off and on in different fighting techniques on my own since I was 13, I've never really had to deal with being busted up, jumped by a group of 4 to 5 people that I wasn't able to get away from. There were a few attempts. I've never not been able to get out of a certain bad situation. And I've had images of police in my mind blocks before I'll see the police, which is important because I don't currently have insurance and I'm missing like a license plate. I'm trying to take care of that. But I've seen like the universe not put me in really dangerous situations. And I've always taken note of that. Mm. And I wish some men would think about that. Like, why does some men, like I grew up. Okay. So the guy that used to teach me how to box, it was a friend of the family. And I consider him one of my most favorite teachers. He was my Miyagi. But this guy grew up Japanese in Portland in the 1970s. And, you know, a build like Bolo Young, but a guy that actually lived the mobster lifestyle in the 70s, collecting for a Greek gangster and then working at nightclubs after he got released from prison in the 80s. So he had all types of stories worthy of a Goodfellas-style movie. But as I grew older and less attracted to his lifestyle and his stories, as much as I respect him, as much of a father figure as he was when I was really young, I kept that as I started thinking about karma and why do certain things happen. I'm like, this guy's really been jumped a lot in his life, you know, like 10 years old, beaten up by a bunch of black kids, dumped out of a moving car at the age of 20, and then growing up to become just dangerous And so I guess we can look at this multiple ways. Sometimes people can learn to become really dangerous when they are facing certain odds. But when also someone is repeatedly being beaten up, I definitely don't want to call it karma. But it's interesting how that happens throughout the course of someone's life over and over and over again. And someone else seems to survive each and every day, despite the threats that seem to be around us. Mm. And so far, I've been a survivor. And I'm happy to say that at the age of 35, I have not broken a bone.
Mm. Me neither, actually. I was just thinking about this one. Like, when I get angry, I can yell and be really, really nasty. Like, I developed this defense mechanism because I'm overweight, and I've been overweight my whole life. I just realized yesterday that, oh my God, all my friends have always been the losers, the rejects, the nerds, the ugly people, the other fat people, and that kind of thing. I was never part of the skinny, hot-looking, popular kids crowd or what have you. It was always with the losers, always with the rejects. And it occurred to me that it was simply because of my physical appearance and my inability to cope with social situations terribly well because of basically not having that great of a childhood. And then something occurred to me. All those popular people were wankers. Just dicks. They were totally full of themselves, and a lot of them didn't have a freaking soul. They really didn't learn. It's kind of like Captain America, you know? Somebody who's known strength all their life loses the value of having strength. But a weak man who's given it knows the value of it. And knows compassion for other people. And I think that's part of the reason why I've turned out like I have, because I have had to be compassionate in order to survive. I've had to hang out with people who are more or less rejected by others, just so that, because they were the only people who would hang out with me. Isn't that sad? It sounds really sad, doesn't it? However, it's those really sad, nasty situations that happen earlier in your life that you can choose to use as either a positive influence, something that you want to draw from and apply later on and help others with, or if you want to use it as a negativity spike and use it for a reason why you can reject who you used to be and start to predate on people. By predate, I mean predator, of course. And that was kind of like, it did happen to me for about a year or two in high school, where I was becoming really abusive, like a forked tongue. And that was kind of like my defense mechanism, because I knew that I couldn't be violent anymore. So I became abusive, and I developed such a forked tongue that I could literally just size people up in seconds, figure out what that was making them insecure, and just pull on that thread and make them really, really feel in pain. But I realized that when I did that to people, they had real reactions that actually wound up having real consequences for me. Just like when I was violent, and I got suspended every single time I was violent, regardless of if I started the fight or not. Every single time I actually really hurt somebody's feelings, they would go and they would tell on me like a little tattletale. And guess what? They wouldn't tell on me and say what I said. They would tell on me and say that I did something completely different, something that I was absolutely innocent of. And I'd still get suspended. Why? Because I got a track record.
Now, I've had similar experiences with that, as far as even being blamed for things that I wasn't even starting. But that was all by design, maybe, to lead me away from the world of violence. But go ahead.
Mm. But what happened was, I think it was when AFR was having a little bit of problems a couple of years back. I had a conversation with the other hosts and this dude who was supposed to be doing the archiving. And I purposely lost it. Like, this is the first time I actually purposely got angry and was nasty to somebody in years and years. And guess what? Did it help AFR? No, it didn't. Did any of the archives or anything, the reason why I was getting angry, get done as a result of that? No, it didn't. Did some of the other hosts start to become afraid of me because they saw how angry and violent and aggressive my language of? Yes, it did. And that taught me a very important lesson, is that when you lose it, you have a choice. And if you choose to lose it, you will lose more than your calm state of being every single time. I have never once gotten into a rage fit that has wound up producing some kind of benefit. It's all negative. It's always bad. When you're really, really angry and you're actually targeting a human being, that is when you are becoming the enemy. That is when you are watching yourself turn into what you despise. And you have to stop yourself in that moment when your little voice in your head goes off, Vinny, you're being a dick, bro. Rein yourself in.
And we all have to go to spaceweather.com or spaceweather.com and see if there's a solar flare. At least that's what I always say. I'll make it funny even if it's not funny. It's only, and then see if it's an Alex Ansari solar flare firing us up, because you know what? I've seen those patterns in myself with the geomagnetic storms. But I think that there's definitely forces that want to tear us apart sometimes when we get stressed out in the alternative media and start lashing out. And just by being aware of this pattern, it helps kind of reel myself in from being reactive to it. Mm. You know, just from the experience of seeing how, you know, we're using technology, we're using Skype, we're putting ourselves out there, you know. So, you know, the audience and whatnot might be really into conspiracy theories about electromagnetic warfare and whatnot. And, you know, what do you think some of us might be going through, though, just by being connected on Skype, just to keep it real just for a minute? And sometimes I felt, you know, on a more serious note, that there's been forces trying to tear us apart in some of these networks by forces we don't even understand. Mm. But is that being a victim? I don't think so. I think like things like humor. I interviewed one guy named Joe Anonymous on my YouTube channel. He wanted to talk about dealing with negative people and trolls and things like this. And he said, use humor. And when you laugh at them and when you're able to rise above their feeble attacks, a lot of them go away. But like I said earlier, a lot of them will come around when they're seeing pain that they can feed on. And so, yeah, it's definitely important to not give them so much food
or
ammo. Can I give
an example? Saw a video on Facebook, and this dude was like being really aggressive, and this person's sitting on the train, and the dude walks up to them and just starts like really, really kind of like being aggro, like right in their face. And the dude behind him on the other side of the train just gets up and pulls his pants right down on the ground. And then the whole carriage just laughs at this dipshit. and the dude just goes, oh my God, like totally freezes, pulls his pants up and walks away with his tail between his legs. Now, isn't that an interesting example how without using any violence of any kind, you can totally disarm and destroy a violent person?
That's right. There are ways to do that. There's different methods that'll work for a certain amount of time. They won't work with all people, but sometimes confusing someone with your words or getting political, people don't want to get political, and they don't. They don't want to hear conspiracy theories. So I've actually just started going off about 9/11 and shit, you know, and I've seen it scramble brain. That's to the point where I'm like, oh my God, I know how to like not get my ass kicked. I'm just going to overwhelm them with information and they're going to want to get away from me. And sometimes it works. Sometimes it can work with police. It depends. Just straight up attacking police, though, probably not the best tactic. Although if you're really bold, sometimes it'll make the cop go away. You know, if you're truly in a commanding, authoritative, you know, state of consciousness that's so confident it overwhelms their own insecurity, because a lot of them have this programming to obey orders.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes when we're like, demon be gone, you know, and we really mean that shit. I've been doing it lately, and it's like working. It's like, oh my God, he was a demon. She was a demon. And I've gotten used to it. The last couple of years, the last year, people come and go. One last thing I'll add and throw it back in your corner. You're talking about growing up and being made fun of. One video I made today is called Why Are Nearly All Young Attractive Women So Different Than Older Women? But this also includes men. When people are really attractive, popular, strong, and intelligent, that includes their ability to sell things, when their mind is sharp, when they have really, you know, tight cognitive function, quick with their words, quick on their feet, quick on their thinking, and they can manipulate people, shake that ass, or shake money out of people. So I just described to you a male and female component to that, so it's not gender specific, now that we're on the same level. As long as someone can continue to do that, they will never change or investigate their spiritual side until they're forced to, until they are no longer able to push people around, shake that ass, or think people's money out of their pockets and into their pockets. It's when their health fails, when their beauty fades, and they're no longer alpha male or female. And so I'm seeing this connection between really narcissistic, beautiful people, the beautiful people, you know, Marilyn Manson, and other people that have to try harder in society to be socially accepted. It doesn't mean that we're not beautiful, but for whatever reason, those of us that were exiled socially, we had to go our own way if we were to become more conscious. Otherwise, the dark side is to become resentful in return and become a violent member of society. So many violent members of our society are rejects of our society that have gone to the dark side.
Mm. I mean, when things have been working for you for a long, long time and suddenly they don't work for you anymore, that's when you start to realize that you don't have everything under control. Things aren't that easy and you're not God, right? It's kind of like the easier your life is, the weaker you are. Isn't that an inherent truth, Alex? People who had no trauma, no trouble, no challenges, for whom life has been a piece of cake, are those who will snap like a matchstick as soon as something difficult comes upon them, and they're completely incapable of dealing with it.
Children will push to see how far they can take it. Children, babies, ourselves maybe, we push to see how far could we, and then some children will actually smack their mommy. And I do not believe every father or every husband is actually smacking mommy. And so it's something in the animal human instinct to slap and fight and go, ah, I want cookies. Gimme, 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 whatever you can gimme. And so adults grow up as they learn to shake it and grab stuff, the male-female equivalent, and they take it as far as they can go until someone says, no, there's consequences for your actions. So some people are being raised to be like their parents, to be like their mother and father that do that stuff. So
some people are being raised without consequences for their actions, and in so doing, they take actions which hurt other people all the time. And those other people have perhaps had the direct opposite path through life, where they've always had consequences for their actions. And so when somebody is mean to them or takes something from them, instead of taking it back and fighting, they give in, they retreat, and they go back somewhere else. And then they start to grieve on the process or whatever, and then try to bring themselves back to square one. Now, I'm not 100% sure whether that's an unhealthy response, because that's how I am, bro. When somebody takes something from me, you know, I'm quite a possessive person, you know, like if somebody would like take a camera and then not give it back or something, I'll be pretty pissed. And it just seems like I retreat inwards when that kind of stuff happens, because throughout my life, I've always had consequences for my actions. But likewise, ironically, I've always been the exception to the rule for a lot of people. So when others go into, I don't know, any situation or whatever where you there's a lot to learn, people like me are lucky enough that other people see that you're talented, see that you want to work really hard, and see that you actually will be capable of achieving something, because you're willing to put in what it takes out of you in order to get the results that you want. So these people who are capable of recognizing that sort of energy in other people, that sort of passion, they'll often take you under their wing. And I can't actually describe to you just how many really intelligent, successful, and in some cases very powerful intellectual activists and researchers and editors of magazines and radio talk show hosts and network owners and everything all over the world now have basically just been taking me under their wing, one after the other. Throughout my whole life, it's kind of been this way. And I'm wondering, would I be what I am? Would I be who I am without other people recognizing the value in me and putting themselves on the line for me? And the answer is definitely no. I would be a radically different person if it weren't for other people giving me their knowledge, giving me their energy, and giving me their faith and their trust. Now, a lot of people don't get that. They get the exact opposite. You get nothing but ridicule, discouragement, abuse, and hopelessness. And if you're not careful, that can consume you. And you'll sit back and you'll tell people like me who are hopeful, who are passionate, that what I do in my life will not make a difference in anything. Why do they say that? Because that is the lesson they learned. That is the lesson that other people have taught them throughout their life. It's not true. It's just a subjective experience. And if you haven't had the right experiences in your life, if you haven't had those kind of beautiful things happen to you, those synchronistic occurrences that you will later find out are so valuable to your very being, if you do not have that, it is a great loss of potential for the entirety of your life. You won't be able to have faith in yourself until other people have faith in you first, a lot of the times. And that is why it's such an important part of being a talk radio show host and being a YouTuber to not just be about you. It is truly an obligation to inspire others and to support others the way you have been inspired, the way you have been supported. Otherwise, the link in the chain breaks and you accomplish nothing but tying people down instead of lifting them up.
It's called earning respect without having to dump people in the river. And that's definitely what we are, what we have basically drawn to us, I would say, and also speaking for myself, from some people over the years, because it takes a certain amount of guts, and people are going to hate, and there's sacrifice involved in some cases, and hatred that's thrown our direction. And it's worthy of getting the respect from others when we really respect them for what they have done themselves when they were being made fun of 10 years ago, 15 years ago, so on and so forth. And that makes it worthwhile. Not only the respect of those that have already done the work, but also those that we know appreciate it, those that have the sight. Because there's plenty of people acting like that character from They Live. I've got one that can see, that are directing their own programming, as you mentioned, but also including saying things like, bro, why are you even doing anything? All is futile. There is no power in, I mean, where does that come from? Oh, so I'm supposed to stop everything, and why are you trying? And first of all, to clarify, I am not promoting some new age collective shift in consciousness or using language that goes the following. Unless we all wake up, we're going to fall over the cliff. We're falling over the cliff, and people have already fallen over. Has anyone heard about Afghanistan being invaded? Has anybody ever heard of Iraq being invaded? Has anybody ever heard of Western governments creating groups like ISIS to invade other countries? It's already the end of the world for some people right now. But it may not be the end of the world, but you know what? It's already been the end of their lives. So this is really about our lives, because the world isn't going to end. The world's still going to be here. It's about our lives. How are we going to live our lives in these last days? Because we are in the last days, damn it. At least of our lives. These are the last days of our lives as they will be. And then, you know, we're one day closer to the last day on earth. Not to get too religious on anybody. But it's really, in my opinion, about how we live while we're here. And it's about the journey, not the end destination. The New Agers and the heart or fearmongers, both should sit in the same classroom, with or without a dunce cap, and just deal with their own attachment to their own outlook on how the future is going to be. Whether they view the end or whether they view the Pleiadian ascension, New Age rapture, both of those things deal with future events. We need to be in the here and now and believe that we have a part in doing something, even if it's just for ourselves, even if it's just for our community, and even if it's just as simple as finding those ways for us to stop supporting the system in our own way. Forget what everybody else is doing. Most people that ask for easy solutions, I have found to be Democrats that voted for Obama. So, I mean, in Portland, at least, I'm sure other people have seen similar. But some people that want to hear easy solutions aren't even beginning to address the sociopathic problem that we're seeing in today's society.
I love that, actually. I get that all the time. Oh, Vinny, you're going to talk about the problems, but tell us the solution. Let me ask you something, bro. If you don't understand the fucking problem at all, what kind of solution could you possibly implement that will work? Okay? You're jumping the gun. You're trying to miss out the important difficulties that you need to go through in order to harden you so that you can actually implement the solutions. Okay? If you're weak and unchallenged, it's kind of like, I watched James Bond Skyfall last night, and The dude's like pretending to be dead, and he's on holiday for ages, and he's just drinking and having fun and everything, and then he comes back and he goes through the tests for agents, you know, the physical and the shooting and the psychological tests and everything, and he fails miserably. And that's kind of what it's like being in the truth movement. If you are, you know, like top of your game or whatever, like if you're kind of like a noob, right, to the truth movement, but you're coming from another sector, like let's say for example myself, really really top salesperson, can make money like that, quitting all of that life puts me into nothingness again. And I had to learn from scratch how to do everything. Okay, it's like going to high school, primary school, secondary, whatever, and university, and then being taught afterwards that everything that you'd been taught your entire life was bullshit, and that you have to start from scratch. That is the level of commitment you need in order to survive in this movement. You have to be willing to be set back by a decade and still survive and fight tooth and nail. You know why that's so important? Because if you don't, if you give up, two things are going to happen. Number one, the other people who see you give up are going to be discouraged. Number two, the fight that you're against is the enslavement and extermination of mankind. You do not have a right to give up that fight if you have begun. You don't have justification to sit back and try and enjoy your life thinking that you've done enough to save humanity. Unless humanity is saved, unless this psychopathic control system is destroyed and dismantled and replaced with something better, something that humanity deserves. You cannot give up. You may want to. It may be hard. It may be the most traumatic thing you've ever gone through in your freaking life. But you don't really, at the end of the day, have much of a choice. Because the consequences of not doing anything is to watch everything that you'd ever held dear be destroyed in slow motion, and eventually nothing of value will exist anymore at all, and you won't be alive to see it. You won't be alive to grieve for all those things that people have suffered and died for over generations and generations to build. You won't see that anymore. It will all be gone, and there will be naught but scumbaggery left. And that will be your fault if you give up.
And with that, I believe the microphone is now in the hand of the audience. There's plenty of room on the dance floor. There's plenty of websites that are being started every single day. And there's more and more people exiting the mainstream media looking for a show that resonates with them. And with that, we're going to conclude this, probably one of the best discussions Vinny and I have had, that's, I think, solution-oriented, that has kind of a realistic look of what we're looking at in the truth movement in society. And when I talk with Max Egan next, we're going to be talking about how do we protect our minds from sociopaths, or protect our hearts, rather, in society, not so much the government. And that's what's important, that for those of us that have empathy, that have heart, that we keep doing what we're doing. And with that, Vinny, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, bro. And if anybody wants to listen to my broadcast, it's a few hours after Alex's, every day, Monday through Thursday in the United States. That's 9 till 11 Central, which is, I think, 10 till 12 Eastern and 7 till 9 Pacific time. And locally in New Zealand, because we broadcast live from the future, it is Tuesday through Friday, 4 p.m. till 6 p.m. And I have been surviving on donations for quite some time, and that's because people donate regularly. So please, if you value the work that I'm doing for humanity, you don't have to pay for it. Nobody does. The guests don't have to do any work. I do all the work myself to help them get their words out, whatever their words might be, regardless of whether I agree or disagree. If you like that whole idea, and if you like the whole idea of having humor and honesty and integrity, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and start up a $5 a month donation today, and I'd really much appreciate it.
Excellent. And I am over at youtube.com/AlexAnsery. People can find my work there. And for Vinny Eastwood, for the specific time zones, go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, click on Show Schedule. And so, of course, as a reminder, West Coast time is 3 hours before East Coast time. Just as a friendly reminder for people that aren't used to different time zones. And it is great to have so many people on this network that are going to be joining in the near future. And those that already are on the network, I'm excited to see it grow. Well, we're out of time. We will see you in a few days to next week. Interviews will be archived at the YouTube channel. Until next time. I'm Alex Ansary, reminding you the path to the ultimate truth and place of power still lies within. Thank you for listening.
Do you realize every day we are being put under constant stress from wireless radiation? What's worse is that you don't even know that it's happening. It puts as much stress on our body as if we had a constant viral infection, draining our energy and sapping our strength, or just making us irritable and fatigued. These wireless fields are being emitted from computers, microwaves, mobile phones, power lines, and any electrical appliance. Now there is a solution. A group of research engineers in New Zealand have come up with an active shielding device that shields you from wireless radiation at a cellular level. Blue Shield comes in three models, a household, portable, and USB that plugs into any computer. The great thing about Blue Shield is it is very affordable and guaranteed to last. A one-off purchase will see you being protected for years to come. Visit AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click on the Blue Shield banner. Blue Shield, brought to you by TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com.
Nicotine, alcohol, good drugs. Coincidentally, tax drugs. Ooh, how does this work? Thank God they're taxing alcohol, man. It means we got those good roads we can drive on. Because I'll tell you something, I'll be honest, man. If I were going to legalize a drug, it sure wouldn't have been alcohol. Sorry, there's better drugs and better drugs for you. That's a fact. Pot is a better drug than alcohol. Fact. Fact, stop your internal dialogue. But Bill, alcohol's a little... Shut up! You're wrong, get over it. I'll prove it to you, man. You're at a ball game or a concert and someone's really violent and aggressive and obnoxious. Are they drunk or are they smoking pot? They're drunk. I have never seen people on pot get in a fight because it is impossible. Hey, buddy. Hey, what? Hey, hey. End of argument.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck.
Yeah!
Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public.
American Freedom Radio.